There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Favre, my co-host, and Nasser Hamid, El Macho Hombre de Pakistan. This is podcast number 291, July 9th, 2008. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads get you the F1Weekly.com website for the ads that interest you. From geodesic domes to garden gnomes, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. And of course, we thank Yahoo Ads. On today's show, can Lewis go all the way? Does Ferrari miss Tot and Braun? DC gives his approval. And McLaren joins the Shark Fin Club. Stephen, welcome to the studio. How are you today?
Great. How about yourself, Mr. Rogers?
I'm absolutely wonderful. Finally got over the Independence Day celebrations and all that of last weekend. And I had my fill of every possible American food, including Velveeta cheese.
Velveeta? I had a good time. Went to a couple of baseball games and watched a Formula One race.
Keep up the good work, Stephen. Nothing surprising there, of course. At least you didn't sleep on the tarmac this time.
No, not this time.
Excellent. Let's welcome Nasser to the studio. I see he's ran through the front doors, running late, but still always on time, as far as I'm concerned. Nas, welcome, and how are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. How is everybody?
Everybody is just wonderful here, feeling the goodness to be an American. Now, how did you celebrate your Independence Day with the celebration of eating 76 hot dogs?
No, not that many hot dogs, but I did celebrate around watching 76 hours of motor racing, and that is my pursuit of happiness.
Excellent. There was a lot of racing on this weekend, last weekend.
Yes, it was. And then, you know, top of the weekend was listening to your podcast and hearing, hello, listeners.
Exactly.
She's back.
Yeah, so, yeah, we had a...
The Hawaiian Tropic is back.
Mm-hmm. She was able to fly in and at least join us for a little race coverage. So, excellent. It was good. And, of course, let's just jump right to it. I'm sure that you enjoyed the British Grand Prix, Stephen.
I did. I like wet races. They tend to be my favorite because it makes good drivers look bad and bad drivers look brilliant. By looking at the podium, you can kind of see how that happens.
There were no bad drivers up there, Stephen. I don't know what you are talking about.
Yeah, they're going to give one of those bad drivers a new contract just because he scored points in the last three races.
You must be talking about Rubinho?
Rubinho. But I wouldn't call Rubinho a bad driver. He's just not had the form that he had when he was a younger driver. Nowhere near the form he had in Ferrari. But again, you know, most driver's success is 90% package, so... But wet races are always fun to watch. I'm happy for Lewis. He basically dominated, and I'm actually sad for Heike because apparently he was having tire troubles, which led to his demise, so to speak, in the race.
Yeah, and I thought that was interesting. I mean, why is Heike having tire trouble? And I like how they come up with these excuses post-race. Why don't they just say Hamilton just outdrove Heike Kovalainen?
Or just say
Heike had tire problems.
Yeah, we deflated Heike's tires so that Lewis could win the race.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I find that all bewildering. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, I could be crying because Fernando didn't win, but, you know, I get over that.
Yeah, a couple of strange things with a couple of strange tire choices by some of the teams in the race at that first pit stop and not changing tires and basically staying out on intermediates when full wets apparently were probably a better decision. Just kind of some weird stuff going on, too, which was kind of fun to watch.
I just wanted to be the fly on the wall at the Ferrari meeting with Montezemolo.
Oh, especially after reading what he was saying in the papers today, that we will make no more mistakes.
I mean, it's... I know they're not panicking, but they're panicking.
Again, we're seeing teething pains. You know, I would expect that the gentlemen that they moved into the slots of race director and technical director were people that were basically working as understudies to Braun and Todt at Ferrari. But seeing a mistake like they made in the race, especially putting Kimi back out on worn intermediates, that's just, to me, that's just a horrendous mistake.
Well, let's bring Nasser into this conversation, because when we talk Ferrari with Kimi and Nasser, the best couple in town.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, regarding this pit stop he was talking about, Mr. Faub, they did basically what Renault did in 2006 with Alonso in Shanghai. Remember when he had a big lead and they changed only two tires?
I mean,
that will screw up the car. I mean...
It's gonna
somebody as non-technical like me all knows that. So I was very amazed. I mean, when you have... Kimi had caught up to Lewis.
Yes,
and,
he did.
And what they were talking about and what I was thinking, that if, you know, because Heikki Kovalainen pitted first, so I figured that if Lewis pits before Kimi, then Kimi will take the lead. And lo and behold, they come in together. And of course, you know, if you are that close early in the race, you do what the other guy is doing. But they took a gamble that the rain will not come back.
Well, I think there was confusion, and the Italians thought the rain wasn't coming back because Flavio, for Renault, thought the rain wasn't coming back, and they left the used tires on Fernando's car.
Yeah, but, you know, Kimi is not racing Alonso this year for the championship.
Oh, I know, but they both suffered tremendously from the big mistake.
See, you take a gamble like this when you have nothing to lose, like Barrichello. You know, he went on
full wet
because he had nothing to lose. Exactly. You know, so he took a gamble. It worked out. You don't take this. It's like the Hamilton thing in Shanghai last year. The guy was at one. Remember one lap, Kimi caught up like 5-6 seconds. You know, that should tell you bring the guy in. Not and then Hamilton was racing him for a couple of laps, and we all know what happened. So sometimes common sense has to prevail over.
Exactly. Especially at that point in time in the season when Hamilton had a significant lead.
Yeah.
If he could have just finished within a place of Raikkonen, who cares?
That championship should have never gone even to Japan, let alone Brazil.
Exactly. Yeah. But they made the horrendous... That was a horrendous mistake they made in China.
But I got to tell you this, as impressive as the win by Hamilton was, and this is the best way to shut up your critics, dominating performance.
Absolutely.
I think that if Raikkonen had... change tires, intermediate, it probably could have won the race.
I think it would have
been a race. You wouldn't have had Lewis out there 60 seconds ahead of the field.
Yeah, I mean, when you finish a minute ahead of the field, I mean, you've got to have a lot of people making mistakes behind you to contribute to that.
Yeah, but it's not your mistake if other people are making mistakes. I heard that Massa was lapped by Hamilton twice.
Yeah,
he was.
He was
the only car that was down two laps.
That's very sad. And this is the guy who... This is the guy who had a 10-point lead on Hamilton. So sad.
So sorry.
I'm sorry.
Exactly the point that we made last week as to why Felipe Massa will not be world champion.
I heard that, but, you know, he may surprise us.
He may surprise us, but if there are more wet races, he definitely won't be world champion.
But, you know, I was thinking, now that three people are together, joint lead in the championship, and we have nine races remaining, so basically what we have now is a world championship with nine races, like the 1950s.
Yeah.
And I think what's going to happen, just my opinion, is that Jimmy Johnson, the coach from Dallas Cowboys, used to say all the time on Super Bowl Eve that turnover wins big games. And I agree with him. And turnover in Formula One racing is a driver mistake. So let's say all these three drivers don't have a mechanical issue. The guy who's most prone to making a mistake in the next next nine races is the guy with the least experience. So that's Hamilton. So the advantage goes to the two Ferrari drivers. And then, with races coming up in China, Japan, and Singapore also, nighttime, I am fairly convinced there will be at least another race, wet race. And we all know how slippery when wet Massa is.
Well, not
in
that,
the rain.
Since we're going back to Fuji again, Fuji is notorious for being, doesn't matter what time of year you go there, it's wet.
Yeah. So, you know, to me, this is really Kimi Raikkonen's championship to lose.
Yeah. And we could have rain at Hockenheim.
Are you serious?
It's very possible. It was rained out today.
They are testing, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. I know we have 2 weeks, things, but
you never know.
It could be that,
but I agree with Ned. We've got, what, 4 races in the Orient this year. I'll guarantee that at least one of those is wet.
Yeah, and but this is turning out to be a great championship. 3 drivers on equal points, and the guy who's next is only 2 points down.
Exactly. So it's pretty exciting, even though Lewis Hamilton is leading technically because he is the tiebreaker.
He is the tiebreaker.
And also, let's quickly go to Ferrari. Do they really miss Jean Todt and Ross Brawn? And sometimes when there's problems at Ferrari, all of a sudden you'll see a special appearance by Jean Todt in the paddock with his headset on and everything.
Well, you know, despite Schumacher, Brawn, and Todt, and who else has departed, they are winning a lot of races, and they did win the championship last year. So maybe they are missing but not suffering.
Well, it's going to be Germany. I expect Jean Todt and Mr. Michael Schumacher in the paddock in a couple of weeks. I think they'll be
with
there.
A very nice quality outfit, right?
Absolutely. The good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, nice big belt buckle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, excellent.
And the red shirt.
Okay, British Grand Prix, DC announces his retirement. I thought that was very nice.
DC, with all due respect to him, is turning into direct contact.
Exactly.
He takes out another guy this race.
I know, and it's a sad state of affairs, but at least we know he's retiring.
And it's an STR again.
Yeah. I know,
third time he's taking out an STR.
It's bizarre, but my favorite part is, after he took out Vettel, he came out and said that he approves of Sebastian Vettel taking his seat.
Yeah.
Don't you find that interesting?
Yeah, like
the
his approval is requested.
Like,
but he did say, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll have to be interesting. I don't think that Red Bull has... they'd like to get... I think Vettel's probably 1-2 choice for Red Bull. You know, they'd probably love to get Fernando if they could lure him away. But they're going to have to show a little bit more pace before the end of the season.
Yeah, but Fernando, you know... I mean, even Ross Brawn would like to have Fernando next year, but the problem is, you know, next year is wide open. We don't know who's going to be competitive next year.
Yeah.
It's a big gamble. You know, I would laugh if he went to Ferrari next year and Ferrari wasn't competitive. That's the kind of curse you can get.
Yeah, but I think...
If you get what you wish for sometimes.
Yeah, as we have seen. But I think scenery will remain the same. Ferrari and McLaren will
next
be top.
Year?
Yeah,
I don't believe that.
Yeah.
I think it's Honda and Renault all the way next year.
Yeah, yeah.
And with the slick tires.
Why even mention Honda, Clark?
Because I'm trying to be, you know...
Hedge your bets.
Exactly. I'm trying to be nice to the people.
Yeah. Market is already in a turmoil, so hedging your bets is not going to help.
Okay, okay. Let's move on. Saw pictures of the new McLaren with the shark fin. Everybody's going with... If it's aero, they're sticking it on the car.
Well, what is this now? Soap derby going on all over the world? I don't like those shark fins.
I know, but the problem is, I think... People at McLaren have seen the Red Bull, the Toro Rosso, actually improve in performance. And even the Renault's shark finned has shown some improvement, even though I just think...
Yeah, Nelson Piquet Jr. now has quite
exactly.
a big bite, you know?
Yeah, all of a sudden he's, you know, he's nipping at Fernando's heels.
Wow.
Like a shark.
Yeah.
So McLaren had to do it.
Tiburon.
So I'm really, you know, is Ferrari gonna take a nibble?
I hope not. I don't like
it. If McLaren shows a jump in performance and the other teams continue to show a growth, there's a strong chance that they'll... I imagine that they're already trying it out in their wind tunnel to see whether or not it gives them any improvement in aerodynamic.
Well, they've tried everything to the front of the car. I mean, we've got jumbo ears on the Honda to donkey ears on the Ferrari. So now it's
and
back
the Twin
to
Towers on the BMW 2 years ago.
Yeah. I heard Steve Matchett say during the race podcast, oh, I forgot, I would like to thank you and Mr. Tricky Dicky, about those websites where you can go and watch the race.
The way I watch the race live, yeah.
I didn't get that. Thank you for that alarm clock, the message you were going to call me, but that's okay. I was awake.
I'm the host, not the wake-up service. Yeah. You got to talk to you're not the next department.
You're not the reception at Hyde Regency, huh? But anyway, I was able to wake up. My internal automatic clock went on. Hey, it's 4:30. So I thought it was going to be a very painful experience, log in, this and that. It was very easy, and it was ITV commentary.
Yeah.
And they have people on the ground, so it was very nice to hear some interviews. I really enjoyed that.
I did, too. I thought live, it was fantastic.
Live is the way to go, baby. And you know what? About maybe, I don't know the exact time, but maybe 15 minutes or 10 minutes into the show, in the broadcast, and there was quite a bit of pre-race and post-race coverage. I'm all happy that, oh, no commercial. This is great. And just as I had that thought, the first commercial comes in. But, that's okay. At least I watched the race live.
Exactly.
Same time as people in, Uganda.
The links work really, really good.
Yeah.
Keep up the good work, TD, and everybody on the forum for helping us out here in America.
He's like Desiree. He's going on a secret assignment, so we wish him all the best.
Absolutely. We'll miss TD, but he'll be back because he loves us.
Yeah, especially you.
Exactly. Williams just announced that they're going to shift the focus from the 2009 program back to 2008. Steve, did you hear about that?
Yeah, no, I missed that one.
Yeah, they laid off a couple of 2009 guys, and they're going back to the focus on the 2008. I saw some of their performances in the past few races. I would stick with the 2009 program, personally.
It kind of doesn't make a lot of sense to jump back after you've already made the commitment to the next year's car, unless things were progressing better than they expected, and so they had some extra bodies to throw back at the 2008 car. It just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, there's so many changes in the 2009 season, with the slick tires, the suspension, and the lack of aero, that I think most teams are now 60-40 focusing on 2009, except for maybe McLaren and Ferrari, the true championship contenders. Nasser?
Well, as far as Williams is concerned, where they are is not a surprise. And because, unless you have a big manufacturer behind you, you're going to be suffering. But what is surprising for me is the performance of Mr. Kazuki Nakajima. Not that he's winning races or being on the front row, but I really expected Mr. Rosberg, Nico Rosberg, to have a big distance between him and Kazuki. But halfway through the season, Kazuki Nakajima has 8 points, same as Rosberg. And Nico must be frustrated not to be in a competitive car, but he is, in my opinion, sleeping in the bed he made. As you know, he has another year or two to go on his Williams contract, and Mr. Williams, or Sir Williams, I should say, has said he won't release him even for $50 million. And who's going to pay $50 million for Nico when Grosjean and Buemi and Bruno Senna are knocking on the F1 door?
Or Nakajima looks just as fast.
There you go, same points, And which basically means, and this is very unfortunate for a talent like Nico, that he may be looking at the possibility of a 4-year run in Formula One without a win, because without the best package, nobody wins. We all know that. But I hope things get better, because I would hate to see Nico Rosberg become another Mark Webber.
I know, that would be a tragedy, because when he first burst onto the scene, it was exciting. Young, fresh, doing outstanding. Not only that, but I sense a little bit of dissatisfaction between Rosberg and the team at Williams. There's some frustration there.
He does not look like a happy camper, or what you would call whippersnapper.
Yeah, he's no longer a whippersnapper, and the problem is that affects your performance.
Of course.
And I don't believe Patrick Head is happy with Nico. And it's possible, people are talking about Nico replacing Kwicknick. I don't believe that. It's hard to believe that he's going to stay at Williams, because I know he's very frustrated. He's probably occasionally listened to KK, his father, and taking a little bit of advice. But I can't imagine Nico Rosberg putting up with another dismal year in 2009. But we'll see. Once again, I think that the slate is going to be clean in Formula One for 2009, and we don't know who is going to be at the front of the spear.
Well, talking of Nico, quick Nick, Mr. Nick Heidfeld, even though he finished over 68 seconds behind Hamilton in second place, this was his third podium of the season for him, and second in the last three races. Must be great relief for him, because his career was looking like it was on NyQuil. So being a German guy, I will not be surprised. I'm doing a decent job, if not as good as Kubica. I will not be surprised if he's retained by BMW.
Very, very true. And he had some great aggressive passes. He's showing
that. TF?
Yeah, he's showing. I agree. Quick Nick, I don't know what happened, but he's gotten out of his slump and looking quite machismo.
Well, he's saying the reason is that he has now learned how to warm up the tires and qualifying and all that.
Is that what it is?
That's what he's saying. And again, it really goes back to what you just said earlier about Kovalainen. You know, don't blame the tire. Just admit the other guy is faster than you on that day. And, just work from there, you know.
Yeah, it's a little classier when you... I was surprised, but Martin Whitmarsh came out and protected little Heike and said, yes, the tires were problematic, blah, 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 blah. But in reality, it seems like Lewis Hamilton saw the light and Heike couldn't see it. So there you have it.
Yeah, I just wondered, too, if maybe they gave... Thinking back in the way the performance difference between the two cars, if they possibly set up Hamilton more for a wet run and Heike more for a dry run.
It's possible. You got to think of the points, but I don't believe that.
No, I also don't. And we don't know. Maybe there was a problem with Heike. But, you know, I got to tell you, I was thinking about this when, I believe it, when Gerhard Berger and Ayrton Senna raced for the first time, Gerhard Berger qualified faster than him. And these are exact verbiage from Gerhard Berger in a recent interview. Once the race started, he did not know which way Senna went. When Hakkinen qualified with Senna first time, he out-qualified Senna. And he has stated many times that when the race started, he figured out what Senna was all about. And same thing with Michael Schumacher and Eddie Irvine. When they started with Ferrari at the same time, it was Eddie Irvine who out-qualified. And we all know what happened after that. So probably Heike is going through the same thing. You know, he is like, he was on the podium in the very first race. Hamilton is now leading the champion, I mean, joint leader in three wins, and he's still looking for his first win.
Which I know will come.
It will come, but I don't think this kid, he's not going to beat the ace of Stephen Age, Lewis Hamilton. I am now convinced that this guy is not going to do to Hamilton what Hamilton did to Alonso. Sorry, Clark, but that's just racing reality.
Is it racing reality?
You betcha.
Not my reality, man.
Okay, you need to wake up. I'm going to get you some
Maxwell House coffee?
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We got an in-depth Motorsports Mondial and a tea time moment for us. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Our shout-outs last week, let's get through them now. The podcasters at F1Weekly.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world, with Motorsports Mondial and Nasser Hamid, the king of Karachi. Nasser, welcome back to the studio. I hope the tea was hot and yummy.
And very tasty. Thank you, sir. Greetings and racing regards to all from Central Park to Donington Park. Sorry, Silverstone and Tennessee. Headlines in this edition, BRDC burned by Bernie, British Grand Prix to say sayonara to Silverstone, DC does the same to his own career at the end of this season, and Button's triathlon challenge to Lewis is TD'd by Anthony Hamilton. Did you read about this?
I certainly did. The press conference right after Lewis had agreed to do the triathlon, and then Anthony Hamilton sent a press release out, there will be no triathlon. I am the manager.
Yeah, and Pepito.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Lewis needs to focus on trying to win the championship. And, you know, he's also taking part in a McLaren-Mercedes Formula One run at Brands Hatch as part of the, I think it's with the DTM race.
Yeah, it's the DTM.
So they got too many things going on. he just needs to focus
on. Not only that, but you could be injured in a triathlon, which would compromise your championship, which would be foolish.
Very good. Okay, we start with shocking news. Of all the people, from Max Mosley in a press release from FIA, that Silverstone track, which saw the birth of Formula One in 1950, will hold its final Grand Prix next year, 2009. Your thoughts on that?
I think it's unbelievable. It leans on quackery, and the Donington deal is still not
done
in stone.
Yeah.
And I think this is more of Bernie and Max's. What was bizarre was, why is the FIA announcing this in the first place?
Yeah, exactly.
They're not part of the business end of Formula One.
No, they normally don't do the press release, but this is what the press release said. And I quote, "After many years of patient but fruitless negotiation with the BRDC, we are delighted that Bernie has nevertheless been able to ensure that the British Grand Prix will keep its place on the Formula One World Championship calendar," end of quote. Max mentioning Bernie in the official FIA press release looks like Bernie has a chair when the music of discontent between him and Max has stopped. So it's kind of like lovey-dovey feeling now.
Yeah, but the other thing too is that Max or Bernie came out during the weekend and goes, well, that's not written in stone. If they don't meet my standards by the time they're ready to we're ready to race there, we could never have a British Grand Prix again. It's kind of like, yeah, well, maybe we'll let you guys keep a race, but you know,
but Silverstone only needs a little more of an upgrade.
We had a great race on Sunday.
Fantastic. The facilities look great. Dr. Mark and
Tricky Dick
both went to the Silverstone facility for the race. They loved it. It's wonderful. Of course, the porta potties are an issue for some people, but besides that, it's an outstanding facility. It just needs a little bit more. Donington has always had problems with traffic, queues all over the place trying to get in for smaller activities. I think this is I can't see this working out, and I think it's a ruse by Bernie Ecclestone.
Yeah, and timing of this release last Friday is being called cheesy by some, as this was pretty pathetic, as it was, you know, I used to work at a place many years ago. I was there for quite a few years, and they let some people go, quite a few actually, from one particular department, like the week before Christmas. And I remember people saying that, you know, and they could have waited another 10 days, you know. So sometimes you just don't do things just because, you know, they might be too cheesy.
How can I know about that? We've seen that happen.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's called business is business, Nas.
Yeah, I know. 2
and
plus 2
that
is 4.
Policy is also used here at F1 Weekly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
In fact, we only fire people before holidays.
Wow.
That way you don't have to pay for those holidays.
Yeah, well,
more zeros.
And the severance, how many zeros in the severance check?
Brutal.
Okay.
Only zeros in the severance checks.
Yeah. No, this is pretty sad because, you know, this year the track Silverstone is celebrating 60 years of racing, and BRDC, British Racing Drivers Club, which owns the track, is celebrating its 80th anniversary.
No, the timing is unbelievable. It's distasteful.
Yeah, that's the word I should have used.
And what I don't understand is, isn't Bernie British? He has no scruples. I find the whole thing distasteful and just wrong.
Let me tell
no
you.
No patriotism, no loyalty to his, you know, homeland. Or the homeland, you know, the home of Formula One, so to speak.
Well, as Mr. Ivan Boesky once said, greed is good. I tell you what, Clark, 2-3 years ago I went to the Autosport show. And, you know, they have this Professor Watkins lecture, and his wife has written a book, the Bernie's autobiography. She was the one who collaborated, and she was doing an interview with Bernie, very sharp, very smart guy. And she said, is it true that you were, you know, he either grew up or was living near Brands Hatch in Kent during World War II? And she was asking him, I heard that you were, he was a young kid or whatever his age was, that you were helping the war effort by growing potatoes and selling or whatever. Was it out of patriotism or money? And he says, money. Well, this guy is all about money. I have a tremendous respect for him for what he has done. And Formula One, you know, all you have to do is watch a race from 20 years ago and see the difference between
absolutely
anything and everything about Formula One.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, the guy has done a lot and it's been there, you know, for forever.
But everything he's done is always primarily to line his pockets. What we see now is the end result of filling his pockets.
Yeah, it's some of it is very cheesy. I don't like it at all. But what are you going to do? And anyway, according to GrandPrix.com, which is a fairly reliable source of information, and this is not a commercial endorsement. The only endorsement we get are from your bonus checks. Okay, the announcement is not unlike one in May 1999 when it was announced that Brands Hatch would host the British Grand Prix from 2002. And somebody mentioned this on the forum also.
Correct.
Until at least 2012. A few months later, Brands Hatch was sold to the sports promotion company Octagon, largely based on the F1 contract. Octagon ended up with badly burned fingers and had to pay large sums of money to both the Formula One group and Silverstone to get out of its commitments. There is more info on this if you folks are interested on GrandPrix.com. But on the other hand, at Donington, there is celebration in the park, and the owners are planning to spend about $200 million to get the track Hermantilkeized, which is where I have another problem. No wonder there's a kind of hush at BRDC over this announcement. Donington held Grand Prix races in the golden years of motor racing in the 30s, and you know, they have seen shown this, some of the races, Auto Union, Mercedes, whatever. There's a classic scene, the car, one of, you know, the cars are coming on a straight, and it's like a little hilly area, all lush green there, it's black and white, but all grass there, and right like maybe 10 feet from the track, there is a guy fully suited in a cap, in a hat. He's sitting there. I don't know if he's reading a newspaper or a program. It's just like Sunday reading for him, and the Grand Prix cars are going by. Beautiful scene. And, of course, they only had one Grand Prix, Formula One, the 1993 European Grand Prix in heavy showers, where Senna, Ayrton Senna put on a performance which is now part of motor racing folklore. And, folks, if you have not seen this race, just the opening lap will give you a taste of honey and other delights which this race will serve. And so there is some history at Donington, actually, in terms of Formula One.
And they have a good museum there. I mean, Donington is nothing to
Oh, the
to
museum is
at.
Incredible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I certainly hope it works out for Donington because they're a respectable place for racing, for sure.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens.
Well, I'd hate to see them invest as much money as they're lined up to spend and then have Bernie pull the plug because Russia's decided to pony up $20 million to bring in.
Oh, they are coming up also in the Motorsports Mondial. Okay, going back to DC briefly, he's quoted in a newspaper saying that he sent Rubens Barrichello a text message last week to tell him he was retiring before making the official announcement, and he said Rubens replied, "Please change your mind. I don't want you to leave me alone with all these kids." And as we know, some of these kids are very naughty. They go very fast.
That's pretty funny stuff.
And they don't respect their elders.
Oh, no. Yeah. Or even world champions. Ooh. Okay, you know, what else shall we talk about here? You know, Massa, I tell you what, he reminds me of Alain Prost in similar condition, wet weather, because Le Professeur was never good in the rain, as you know. I remember him spinning out once on the parade lap or the, you know, formation lap at Imola.
He was still machismo, Nasser.
Oh, he was very machismo.
He was one of the greatest drivers this world I've ever seen.
Very true, four-time world champion.
My God badge.
Yes. But sad part is he never won a championship with Renault. But he did win with Renault engine.
He won races with all four teams he was with. That's machismo. No other person has done that.
That is very machismo.
And without eating a single hot dog.
No, I think he had some in Phoenix. He raced there, you know. And but, you know, Massa team screwed up his qualifying effort, so something has to be said about that. And Mr. Rubinho made it to the podium for Honda, and it was good to see him in the interview room for the first time in 3 years. The two-legged Rubinho was shining bright on a rainy day. After scoring no points in the first five races, he has now scored points in three of the last four races, and this was his first visit to the podium since the famous six-car U.S. Grand Prix of 2005.
You know, and when I saw his face up there, I missed that. You know, he's always got that quirky smile, yeah. And he's getting emotional, and he's thinking about Brazil and the familia. And I remember, you know, some of his first wins with Ferrari, you know, always crying and tearing and clutching the flag. So, yeah, I miss Rubinho.
No, you know, I'm talking about Rubinho that was on Speed TV, the program on with Robin Miller. They are saying that he might come here and join either Michael Andretti's, you know, Acura is running a program at the American Le Mans, either Michael Andretti or with Gilles de Ferran, who was fellow Brazilian, you know.
Right. Well, that I mean, will not surprise he's me. Liked by all the Brazilians in IRL. I mean, Tony Kanaan thinks he's...
No, he's a very popular
driver. Yeah, he's a very popular guy, and I can see Rubens Barrichello... I think taking a seat in the IRL and being fairly happy.
No, in the American Le Mans series.
Oh, excusez-moi.
Yeah. And so now then we will have in America, only in America, Rubinho, both on two legs and four legs racing.
Only in America.
Okay. And let's see what else we are having. We can say here about the... a little note on Mr. Kovalainen.
I really still don't like that statement. Massa reminds me of Alan Prost. We're going to have to talk about this. We're going to have a special meeting. You're going to buy me breakfast.
Oh, it flames.
for the insult.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell you what. Kovalainen is sitting on 24 points, exactly half of his teammates' tally. So he really needs to crank up. But I think he's done enough to maintain a position in Formula One.
Well, he's only making half as much money.
Yeah.
I think he's still a bargain. He's doing a fine job. You know, I'm going to cut him some slack. Maybe he did have some tire problems. It was an outstanding qualifying for him.
Sure.
And he's usually pretty good in the rain. Mm. We saw him holding off Raikkonen in the
rain. Yeah.
So there's some machismo there. He just needs to find it.
No, I'm sure he will win a race this year, but he will have to, like, do a little bit. He's... you know, getting into the same mode as, same NyQuil dosage as Nick Heidfeld.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah. It's time to wake up and go. Okay, for the second, this should have made you happy. Both are Renault guys. Okay. Second race in a row, Piquet Jr. passed Alonso and put on a good show before his final spin ended his day. But at least he was competitive, and I'm happy for him.
And I agree. I was very happy with him. I was happy with him just in the qualifying day when he made it P7 behind Fernando. Which is where he should be.
Yeah, he should be in the third session.
He should be right there close to Fernando because the cars are the same. He needs to be competitive. And apparently, everybody's getting some of this NyQuil. It's being passed around.
Yeah, and as long as he's qualifying within half a second, I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, so he's picked up a notch. Yeah, I think he's good. Listened to Flavio. And apparently, let's see if he can keep it up for the rest of the season.
I wonder what Flavio told him to motivate him. He probably said... you want to change seat with Grosjean?
Something like that.
That will motivate anybody. Okay, let's go to GP2. Okay. A feature race on Saturday saw great wheel-to-wheel battle for the lead among the top five. Bruno Senna started from pole position but lost the lead after an off-track excursion. Senior citizen of the series, Giorgio Pantano, was the winner, a record 8th win in the series for the Italian driver. Brazilian Lucas Di Grassi, this is a pretty impressive performance from this guy. Lucas Di Grassi was second with Indian driver Karun Chandok third. Swiss driver Sebastian Buemi was fourth. Romain Grosjean and Bruno Senna battled all the way till the end, Grosjean beating Bruno to the finish line. Now, Mr. Karun Chandok, if he keeps doing this good job, visiting the podium on a regular basis, there is a good chance that he may be part of Force India based on performance and not just on the fact that he's Indian. Then his Papito Vicky, who is a very nice guy, I've met him a few times, is close friends with Vijay Mallya. Sunday sprint race, Senna in the rain, sounds familiar? Bruno Senna dominated the sprint race, second win of the season. Fellow Brazilian Lucas Di Grassi was second and Giorgio Pantano third. Top five in the championship, Giorgio Pantano leading with 50 points. Second, Bruno Senna, 39 points. Third, 19-year-old Swiss driver Sebastian Buemi. I understand he's the youngest driver in GP2 right now, and this kid is very quick too. And him and Grosjean have been racing for a few years together, and so far Grosjean had just had a little bit upper edge. And see how things work out. Fourth, and incredibly from only two rounds, meaning four races, Lucas Di Grassi, 25 points. He is a Renault test driver and last year, I believe he was second in GP2 last year behind Timo Glock. Fifth is preseason favorite and the man who won the inaugural GP2 Asia Series, Romain Grosjean. In the sprint race, man, he was, you know, fighting with tires that were going off and he was smoking in corners like a drag racer. I think this kid, you know, one of these days he's going to put it all together and win quite a few races. Very good racing talent. And talking of GP2 Asia, China will host season opener in October as a support race to the Chinese Formula One Grand Prix at Shanghai. Supporting races will also be held at the Bahrain and Malaysian Grand Prix races. Now we come to another tremendous performance, a muy macho performance. Formula BMW Europe, also at Silverstone, support race to the British Grand Prix. Race 1 saw third win in a row for Mexican Esteban Gutierrez. Second was Danish rookie Michael Christensen with Adrian Tombe, son of Patrick Tombe, taking the final podium spot. And I'm pleased to report F1 Weekly listener Kazim Manzoor was in the top 10 and the second highest finisher among the rookies in race 1. In the second race, which was in the rain, Esteban was on the same program as Lewis Hamilton in the Grand Prix, lapping about a second faster than anyone. He won the 11 laps race, 10.5 seconds ahead of Brazilian Pedro Bianchini, and Adrian Tombe was again in third place. Now, Esteban Gutierrez, whom we interviewed, actually we interviewed him and Kazim and Adrian and Marco Wittmann, all Formula BMW drivers. But this year, from six races so far this season, Esteban Gutierrez has been the winner in the last four events, was on the podium in the other two races in Barcelona, and is leading the championship with 164 points. Adrian Tombe is second with 132 points, and Marco Wittmann of Germany at third on 110 points. And Wittmann and Gutierrez are, and also Kazim Manzoor, they are teammates at Josef Kaufmann Racing. And like I said, interviews with all these drivers can be heard on our previous podcast from the last few months. Gutierrez, Esteban Gutierrez is from Monterrey in Mexico, and last year in Formula BMW USA, which I believe was his first year in car racing, single-seaters, he was Rookie of the Year and second overall with four wins and nine pole position. So quite a talent here, and we wish everybody all the best. Now some info on Formula BMW Americas. Alexander Rossi from Northern California, and we interviewed this kid last year, and you know he wants his goal in life is to be, his words, each and every record of Michael Schumacher, and we wish him all the best. He is leading the Formula BMW Americas Championship with 91 points. Ricardo Favoretto is second with 67 points. Rossi was the winner of last two races at Mid-Ohio last month. Their next race is this coming weekend at Lime Rock, located in a very beautiful part of Connecticut. And among the neighbors to the track are Sam Posey and Paul Newman. Okay, now we go to Germany for the FIA GT from Oschersleben. Result was a 1-2 for Aston Martin. Winning combo included ex-Grand Prix driver from Austria, Karl Wendlinger. In days gone by, he was teammate to Schumacher in the Sauber Mercedes sports car program, and his teammate is Ryan Sharp. Sister car of Lucas Lichtner-Heuer and Alex Müller was second, and the Corvette of Marcel Fassler and Jean-Denis Deletre was third. And Jean-Denis Deletre is a favorite of our friends at F1Rejects.com. They mention his name quite a bit. Latest news in the FIA GT series is that Moscow will hold a round of this series starting 2010. Race will take place at the soon-to-be-built 3 kilometers long Eurasia Autodromo Domo Dedievo. And those with a flair for flying will know that Domo Dedievo is one of the three airports that serve the Russian capital. And my understanding is that later this week there is a sort of a Formula One festival in Moscow. So it's good to see motor racing going everywhere.
Will that track be built to F1 standards?
I don't think so. It has to be FIA standards because they have different grading categories. But I'm glad you brought that up. It's not a Hermann Tilke design because
well,
I saw that.
Therefore, Bernie won't put a race there.
Yeah, and it's designed by some like Apex Racing architects or whatever. And I read something interesting the other day that, you know, the Mistral had a long straight and Mulsanne has a long straight at Le Mans. Now there's a FIA regulation that I don't know the exact length, that they will not approve a track for race FIA sanctioned events if the straight is more than 2 kilometers long. There is like a cap on it, how long the straight can be, or any section of the track. And most of it is, you know, because of safety issues. Okay, World Series by Renault at Hungaroring. Race winner Guido van der Garde of Holland. Second was It's my favorite racing name these days. Julien Jousse of France, and third was Brazilian Fabio Carbone. In the second race, Carbone scored his first win in the series. Julien Jousse was again second, and Miguel Molina was third. And Mr. Fabio Carbone, his last name could be Carbone, I'm not sure, and so apologies in advance. Now we come to Indy Racing League. Larry Carter suggests that I should never ask, but did anybody catch any of the IRL race? Steve, it was a road race, did you?
Negative.
And I will consistently answer, nope.
Okay. Well, the reason I was asking is they were showing some photography. Now, you know, when they come to Sears Point, the NASCAR boys, and also at Watkins Glen, they use the shorter version, you know. But the IRL was using the whole 3 mile, whatever it is, of the Watkins Glen. It's located in Finger Lakes region of New York, very beautiful area. And this aerial shot of the track was, I mean, the track is beautiful. You know, the last corner is just like Parabolica in reverse. And it's a shame we don't have the U.S. Grand Prix at Watkins Glen. But anyway, they had the Indy IRL race there. And driving for Bobby Rahal's team, 27-year-old Ryan Hunter Ray from Florida won the race in upstate New York, Watkins Glen. Scott Dixon pulled out a Montoya and spun behind the pace car, collecting Ryan Briscoe in the process. Darren Manning from England was second for Texas Tough AJ Foyt Racing, and Tony Kanaan from Brazil was third for your favorite IRL driver of the past, Mr. Michael Andretti and his team. One of the drivers, top drivers, I should say, in the series, Elio Castroneves, will most likely renew his contract with Penske Racing, according to published reports. The Brazilian has driven for captain since the 2000 season, highlight of which were back-to-back wins in the Indy 500 in 2001 and 2002. A record third straight win was derailed by his own Penske teammate, Gilles de Ferrand, in 2003. Indy Lights, also at the Glen, race one, Rafael Matos of Brazil was the winner. Second was Richard Antonucci, who's listed as of Italy, but he is Eddie Cheever's nephew. And Jeff Simmons was third. Antonucci took victory in race two. Matos was second, followed by a fellow Brazilian lady racer, Ana Beatriz. She also led before being passed by the top two finishers. Grand Am from Daytona, Scott Pruett wins over Alex Gurney in the closest finish in Grand Am history. Fifth win of the year for Pruett and his teammate from Mexico, Mr. Senior Memo Rojas. World Touring Car Championship news. For the first time in over 50 years, international motor racing returns to Morocco. Have you ever been to Morocco?
Not
to
nope.
They speak French there, as you know.
Yeah, I heard about
that. They also
that.
Speak French, I should say.
Yep.
And anyway, FIA has announced a round of WTCC will take place in the streets of Marrakesh in May 2009. And in 1958, final round of the World Championship, Formula One, took place in the streets of Casablanca, and Stirling Moss was the winner in Van Wall. Actually, they had a Formula Grand Prix in 1957 also, but that was a non-championship race.
I think that's great news for North Africa. Outstanding.
Yeah. I like when motor racing is spreading, you know.
Well, they kind of need it, too, because since they've lost the Dakar rally to South America, they can use some influx of
motorsports.
But they do have a lot of what they call, you know, rally rate thing is very big in Europe and North Africa. So there is some other activity.
Yeah, there's local chapters and stuff.
Yeah.
None of the big name stuff going through there
anymore. Okay, now we go land down under, Australian V8, the Sky City Triple Crown from Hidden Valley Raceway in Darwin. I wonder if the Hidden Valley Ranch dressing comes from Hidden Valley Raceway.
Of course it does.
Really? Wow.
No, not.
Don't spoil it for me, Stephen.
Okay, four teammates, Mark Winterbottom and Stephen Richards, finished 1-2 respectively in race one. Garth Tender was third for Holden. Something bizarre happened in this race two. Same drivers appeared on the podium, but in reverse order. Tender was the winner over Richards and Winterbottom. The race involved a situation when safety car was called to remove a Holden banner from the middle of the track, giving an opportunity to Tender to take the lead, who was a Holden driver at the restart. And I read this report, I don't know if it's true, that some are saying that this was placed there intentionally by somebody who was sick and tired of Ford winning all the races.
So this is really
sounds like a Ford fan.
So but this is closing in on some kind of phantom caution.
Yes. something close to
phantom
it.
Phantom debris.
Yeah, but this time you can see the debris. Okay, and same three faces again appeared on the podium for the third time in the third race. Steven Richards, so everybody got a win here, was the winner ahead of Winterbottom and Tender. Some MotoGP news. American rider John Hopkins will miss both Sachsenring and Laguna Seca races due to surgery on his left leg, which he injured at Assen, Holland. And Kawasaki may announce his replacement soon. He may or may not be replaced, but let's see. And we hope he can come back after these two. The race he will come back most probably would be in Czech Republic, Brno. A sale of Super Aguri. Get your checkbooks out, folks. The assets of the departed Super Aguri team, now in administration, will be auctioned on July 31st. Interested bidders will be able to view the lots, including cars and transporters, at Leaf Field later this month.
That's sort of sad.
Yeah. It is. It was a very popular team. Both the drivers were very popular. Man, talking of Super Aguri, did you hear Anthony Davidson's comments about Massa?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did not.
Not sure what's going on there. I'm sure he's frustrated. He's not in F1 anymore. Well, he's still testing for Honda.
Yeah.
Occasionally, but still, I'm not sure what's going on there, but.
But he said, called him like rubbish, useless.
Rubbish and useless. I think he's just saying he imagines himself in the Ferrari and doing a better job. There's some jealousy involved. It's just the human condition, Nasser.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Okay, now we come to, well, you know, Don Henley had his hit, Hotel California. Lewis Hamilton pretty soon is going to have his own big hit, Hotel Caribbean. Lewis Hamilton is on the verge of investing millions of dollars in Grenada, the country of his father's ancestry. The Daily Telegraph, British newspaper, is reporting that the McLaren driver is set to pump $20 million into a luxury beachside hotel development. And the Grenada government is encouraging Hamilton and his father's investment by offering significant tax breaks. And look at the perks, Clark. Mirrors on the ceiling, pink champagne on ice, and free Vodafone service, all included in one low price. Who could ask for anything more? So welcome to Hotel Caribbean, such a lovely place. Do you think he's going to give Alonso a special discount?
Absolutely.
Does he already have that much money?
Yeah. Well, when you're young and you know you're going to be at McLaren for a while, you can get loans really easy.
Yeah, yeah. Smart and rich people, yes, it's the, what they call the opium effect, other people's money. That's how you get richer. But, you know, I guess deservedly so. Okay, now we come to Clark Rogers' favorite series, National Association of Stock Car Automobile Racing. The race name was interesting, Coke Zero 400. Previously known as Pepsi 400, which was previously known as Firecracker 400, and this is held at the July 4th weekend. Tremendous dice at the end. Kyle Busch won crash for final laps in his Toyota over the Ford of Carl Edwards. This is sixth win of the season for Kyle Busch, who is from Las Vegas, Nevada, and is quickly establishing himself as one of the major racing talents in this country. And Clark, you know, he may be one of those few multi-talented drivers who can pull it off in open wheel and road racing also, like Montoya, like Robbie Gordon. It will be interesting to see how his Toyota F1 test goes later in the year. Moving to the Baby Cup Series, the Nationwide Series, Denny Hamlin from Virginia won the nationwide race at Daytona over Toyota teammate Kyle Busch. Dale Jr. was third for Hendrick team in a Chevy. And talking of Rick Hendrick, they have signed ageless Mark Martin for a full season of Sprint Cup racing in 2009. This guy had retired.
He actually signed for the whole season?
Yeah, he had retired.
I thought he said a couple years ago that he was never going to do a full season again.
Yeah. And
but he's like 102. Exactly.
Yeah, minimum, with a 20% discount from NASCAR.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. And talking of Chevy, you know, this was in, I think, on Speed TV's website. They are cutting back on their sponsorships of tracks and races, and given the grim financial situation, sooner or later, you know, it's rumored that the General Motors may march out of NASCAR battlefield. You know what?
It would be horrible, because we really only have three manufacturers in NASCAR right now, and I can't see it. And Ford is in no much better shape than
Chevy. No, they're in worse shape.
Chevy, so.
And this report I'm referring to, I'm pretty sure it's on speedtv.com website. It says that Chrysler, which is now broken away from Daimler Chrysler, that they may be filing bankruptcy. So, you know, I hope we don't have a day when all the cars in Indy racing are powered by Honda and all the cars in NASCAR racing are powered by Toyota.
Well, maybe we can get Renault and Citroën involved.
Well, then that would be Nissan.
Yeah,
that would be good.
Nissan makes this big, massive truck. I can't remember.
I'm actually surprised that Nissan isn't in the truck series.
I think Carlos isn't pushing for that right now.
Yeah.
Well, Carlos thinks he probably thinks that they've got enough money invested in racing elsewhere.
Exactly. When you're, well, we'll see.
Yeah, but Nissan is not a big truck player as they used to be.
Exactly. No, they're not.
Yeah, 20 years ago, they were pretty close to Toyota. They were behind Toyota, but they were running very close to Toyota in terms of overall sales, cars and truck. But now it's a very different world. Okay, sir. Back to Formula One and some other interesting news items. Well, this is of interest to you. Men wearing Renault F1 uniforms have been spotted staying at a local hotel near the Wincheshire Wind Tunnel in Concord, North Carolina. Were you there last weekend or last week?
Mm-hmm. No, but this sounds absolutely bizarre.
No, it's not bizarre. Suggesting that the Renault F1 team is using the wind tunnel to develop its Formula One car. Well, this is a pretty impressive facility, and this is from the Wincheshire Wind Tunnel website. Okay, this is a testing facility for NASCAR and Indy 500 race cars, as well as for auto manufacturers, and went into operation in November of last year. Wincheshire Wind Tunnel is the first of its kind rolling road testing facility in North America and only third rolling road wind tunnel of its scale in existence. As with other wind tunnels operating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and the high-tech rolling road is able to accelerate from 0 to 180 miles per hour in less than 1 minute.
That's impressive.
Yeah, there it is.
Now, where are the other two facilities?
My guess would be somewhere... Europe, probably.
I would guess Germany and France.
Yeah, maybe
I'm
one.
I'm almost certain that there's one in Germany. I vaguely recall seeing something on the History Channel about it.
And, yeah.
And, I think the other one's either France. The other one's probably France or England.
The History Channel, Stephen?
Yeah, Discovery. One of those two.
Wow.
That's my favorite channel still. Okay.
If there's no racing on, we know where Nancy is.
Yeah. Okay, are we ready for another goodie bag of the
We need a goodie bag because we have no interview on this podcast, so...
We can interview you, a brief interview with you.
We could do that next
podcast.
Let's go
to the goodie bag.
Goodie bag, okay, there you go. You know what? I was listening to the weekend podcast, and I heard you tell, which is very disappointing, telling Desiree no political statement, and I was going to suggest Clark Rogers, what you just said in that podcast... Clark Rogers for not president but emperor of America.
Emperor or pontiff, something exciting.
Yeah, what would be your First Amendment to the Constitution? All F1 races live, no commercials.
Absolutely. And then I would say Renault must win all races.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they already do in GP2. That's enough. I'm not
ready. Now, would you send the wrecking ball to Daytona and Talladega?
No.
Okay,
no.
So you're a considerate pontiff.
Well, he doesn't want an instant revolt.
Yeah, the Minuteman will be looking for you.
You have to keep the little people happy.
Yeah, I wouldn't call them little. And once they find out you're Francais, you will be in Montreal in 2 minutes.
No, I would just lie to them. I would say that means I'm actually a member of the France family.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Not the French, but the Bill France.
Exactly.
Very good. Folks, proceeding was a joke. Please, no hate mail. Okay, now we have a... Last week we did a goodie bag from Hemleys. This week we have another one, a brief one, because this is from Harrods. A little bit more expensive for us. Okay, look at some historical and memorable British Grand Prix over the years. 1957. I forgot to mention this. Hamilton... is the 12th British driver to win the British Grand Prix. Okay? But, if you want to research the history, the number of cars that won with British drivers driving is 11. And you may ask yourself, why is that? Because in 1957, when Stirling Moss won in a Van Wall, he had taken over Tony Brooks's car. So that's how they have two drivers for one car. In those days, they would allow that. Anyway... And that's what I was going to start with, 1957, first win for a British car in Formula One on home soil with local lads driving. Moss retired his Van Wall at Aintree, then took over the car of his teammate, the good Dr. Tony Brooks, and fish and chips were sold out before the sun went out. I have heard. Not sure if it's true. Big day for British motor racing because now you see how powerful they are in Formula 1.
Machismo.
Yeah. Okay, 1970, Black Jack Brabham, huh? Pretty creative. Ran out of luck and petrol within sight of the checkered flag. Brabham's mechanic that day, Ron Dennis. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, he was making the same mistakes 35 years ago.
Yeah, some people don't learn, huh? Lucky winner was Jochen Rindt. Interestingly, earlier in the season, Rindt took another lucky win at the expense of Brabham when the Aussie driver made a mistake on the last corner of the last lap in Monte Carlo, which is a
famous mistake.
Yeah, famous mistake. And I was recently, you know, we met Mr. Brabham when he was here.
Indeed.
And you had to yell in his ear again and again the same question, you know. And I was reading his interview, and they asked him about this Monaco, and he said something very interesting. He said, well, I'm entitled to one mistake in my 30-year career.
Which is why you came here now, because you had a 30-year career in cars.
Yeah,
with no hearing.
And those cars were very, I mean, if you ever hear a car from the 30s or the, you know, 50s car, they are loud, very loud.
The V12, yeah. The V10s were deafening.
Almost as loud as the Camry.
No, the Camry is quiet as a mouse. Yeah. And reliable as a dog. Okay, you okay, Mr. Host of the program?
He's laughing at his own jokes.
You should at least let people know that, you know, you are some sort of a French traitor. You're wearing a Citroën T-shirt, not a Renault T-shirt, a Mile 7.
That's true.
I noticed that.
Well, that's because it's André Citroën.
Oh, yeah?
And pretty soon we have 14 Juillet.
Whatever that means.
Bastille Day.
Oh, yeah. So, how are you going to eat like 76 escargots?
Exactly.
There you go. Show your dual, you know, nationality.
Escargot, all that. Foie gras, veuve clicquot.
Fromage.
Oh.
I have a bottle of veuve clicquot on my desk at work because my friend gave it to me. You know why? Because it says at the bottom the place. And what is that place?
Yes.
Thank you very much. People come to my you know, place and say, you know, oh, you drink at work? I said, no, this has motor racing connotation. It has nothing to do with, you know.
You can give that to me if you want for Christmas.
I can make you
I can do is he can drain it for you and give you the bottle back.
I can make a color Xerox copy for you.
No, thank you.
Will that help you?
No.
Okay. Okay, 1973, the screw-up by Jody Scheckter on the opening lap made him world famous in only his second Formula One start. Nine cars were taken out, but happily nobody was seriously injured. Ronnie Peterson started from pole position in his Lotus, but finished a close second to Peter Revson, first win for the driver from New York. Revson remains the only American to win a Formula One race in Britain. World Championship race, that is. 1975, final Grand Prix win for Mr. Emerson Fittipaldi in the rain, driving a McLaren. 1976, race was red flagged at the start. Local bad boy James Hunt was allowed to restart and won the race from arch rival Niki Lauda. 2 months later, Hunt was disqualified, and the reason given that he should have never been allowed to restart, and Lauda and Ferrari were handed the win. And this was that 76 very contentious season, especially between the teammates. For the drivers involved, Lauda and Hunt remain very good friends, but Teddy Mayer and McLaren and Luca and Ferrari, bitter
rivals. Exactly, and the ending in Japan.
Yeah, same even today. 1977, dawning of the age of turbo and radial tires as Renault and Jean-Pierre Jabouille show up in their yellow teapot on Michelin tires. That was a
machismo.
Yeah, absolutely. Another debutant that day was Formula Atlantic standout Gilles Villeneuve in a McLaren and out-qualified team's regular number two driver Jochen Mass of Germany. And I remember what a big thing this was that Gilles Villeneuve won his debut out-qualified Jochen Mass, who had a lot more experience actually than Gilles Villeneuve in racing at that time. In an ironic twist of fate, it was the car of Jochen Mass that was hit by Villeneuve's Ferrari on that tragic day in 1982 at Zolder, which, you know, where Villeneuve was killed. 1987, a classic Nigel Mansell move with two laps to go, faking foul-mouthed teammate Nelson Piquet to the left and then darting to the right to make a high-speed pass, touching wheels and against team orders to win on home Grand Prix. In 1995, first Grand Prix win on home soil for pretty boy Floyd, Mr. Johnny Herbert. whom we interviewed, I believe it was last year or 2 years ago.
Last year, two years ago.
In Benetton. And this was made possible in a dumb move. You have to see this move if you have not seen it. Made possible in a dumb move by Damon Hill trying to wrestle the lead from Michael Schumacher. Never an easy task. Both ended in the gravel pit. And Mr. Rogers, I would like to ask for your express written consent because you are the host with the most. Murray Walker, you know who that is.
Of course. He's okay. A machismo man.
I know you don't listen to other podcasts because you're a busy executive.
I'm religious.
Oh, wow. And what is your religion? Renoology?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, seriously, on the BBC podcast Live 5 or whatever that, you know, website is, but you can Google and find it. There is a, I think it's like a special edition podcast with Murray Walker taking calls from listeners. And this is a guy who's been around forever. Probably he's the only guy who's been around motor racing longer than Mark Martin. And there are people calling, some gentleman called from Indiana also. And he's, I would highly recommend to listen to this. It's a very fascinating conversation with people. And he's talking about, yeah, I went to Donington in 1937, you know, when Rosemeyer and all these people were racing. And he goes, the first time I went to Silverstone was 1949 when I was doing the commentary. So there's a lot of packed history there. And they, some buddy asked him, of all the races you have been and watched, what are the two top races for you? And I learned something very interesting. And coming from him, it's probably more reliable than hearing what I've been hearing all along. He said one is the Nigel Mansell victory that I talked about with Piquet. And he said the second is the 1992 Monaco Grand Prix, where, you know, Mansell, all I've heard over the years that, you know, he was leading and then he made a pit stop because he thought he had a puncture. And Senna took the lead, and then, you know that race, right, 1992. And he says what had happened in that race, he did not have a puncture, as it turned out. A nut had come loose on the wheel. Okay, so when he came in, the team, I believe they changed all the tires. Okay, now had they not changed the tires and just tightened the nut back, he would have gone out in much shorter period and would have come ahead of Ayrton Senna. But if anybody is interested, please listen to this. I will highly recommend this. And we're not getting any quids from BBC or Holly Samos to say this. It's just public service message. And we thank you for listening.
Thanks, Nasser.
You're looking really sad. It's thanks. All good, Clark.
Thanks, Nasser. Keep up the good work listening to other podcasts. I'm sure they're outstanding.
I'm learning, you know. You live and learn.
Keep up the good work sharing this information with the listeners.
But I have unconditional love, not only for F1 Weekly, but for Monsieur Clark Rogers.
We're going to take a quick break now and come back with the wrap-up. We'll be back in 60 seconds. Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you. Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, a quick wrap-up. Steve is going to give us the forum update.
And thanks to Ye for the forum update. This week's snippets. After the soggy carnage of Silverstone, Richard Bright took his first win in the prediction competition, and the overall points leader is now Apex Slide. Dr. Mark and Tricky Dick were at the British Grand Prix weekend and have posted their experiences. We expect some photos to be posted soon. David Coulthard's retirement announcement opened discussion on his future job prospects. The move of the British Grand Prix to the Silverstone to Donington brought mixed reaction on the forum. The Massenet movement on the forum took a little beating from the Felipe Pirouette performance during the race.
Spin, spin, spin!
The Spin Master! We said happy birthday to Tricky Dick in the mysterious Schumacher Girl, 1956. And calling all Bat Racers, a new game is waiting for more to join up. Check out the Bat Racer thread for more information. That's all for now. Keep up the good work, and thanks again. Yay.
Keep up the good work, Stephen. And, of course, the forum. I highly recommend it. Don't be shy or bashful. These people are sophisticated. And, I mean, you could learn from baked beans to you know, how Nasser feels about a certain driver all in one flash. So it's pretty exciting stuff. Real quickly, I want to give a shout out to San Francisco Formula One Group at www.sff1.com. These guys do an outstanding job. They get together in San Francisco, and they also visit museums in the Bay Area. If you're in the area and you need some F1 help, go to sff1.com, and they always meet over at the Overtime Sports Bar and Grill, 398 7th at Harrison, and you can call them up, get your brunch prepared for the race at 415-863-1688 in beautiful downtown San Francisco. We want to mention real quickly our MySpace site, myspace.com/F1Weekly. Check us out and make us a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who makes this show possible. Good night.
Good night.
Ta-ta.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.